Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, for the first time in U.S. history, a former president has been charged with a crime. And while the specific charges are not yet known, the grand jury that voted to indict Donald J. Trump had been hearing evidence about hush money payments to an adult film star during his 2016 campaign. Trump is expected to surrender to authorities Tuesday. Listeners, how are you feeling about the indictment? What are your questions? What impact do you think this indictment will have? Tell us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Email forum at kqed.org. We want to hear from you after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Prominent Republicans rallied quickly to defend Donald Trump against a grand jury indictment, including the Speaker, California's Kevin McCarthy, who tweeted that Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg weaponized our sacred system of justice against the ex-president, and that the House would hold Bragg's abuse of power to account. And while Governor Newsom did not immediately comment on the indictment, choosing instead to tout his new campaign for democracy against lawless Republicans, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made clear he would not extradite Trump if requested, even though it is the law. We hear now from a California Democrat who has some experience trying to hold Trump to account, Congressmember Adam Schiff, who managed the first impeachment case against him and was on the January 6th committee investigating the Capitol attack. Welcome to Forum, Congressmember.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
What was your immediate reaction when news of the indictment broke?
That this is an affirmation of the bedrock principle that no one should be above the law, that the law has to apply equally and to everyone, the rich and the powerful, as well as ordinary citizens. If a grand jury of citizens in New York believed that Donald Trump committed various criminal offenses, and the Manhattan District Attorney believed that they could prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, I think they're obligated to go forward and not give him a pass because of his past position or future position. So I think it's an affirmation of the rule of law and a very important one.
You have long talked about the need to hold Donald Trump accountable for offenses that you believe he committed or may have committed. How does it feel to you that what he is being charged for is related to payments to cover up an alleged affair with an adult film star?
Well, I wish the Justice Department had moved with a greater sense of urgency. And if it found, as we did on the January 6th committee, a basis for criminal charges against the former president, those would have been the most serious charges. And in an ideal world, you go forward with the most serious case first. But the Justice Department waited so long, I think, to begin investigating anyone but the foot soldiers that investigation has been much prolonged. And so the Manhattan District Attorney went forward with the evidence when they had it. I think that's the role of a district attorney. These aren't coordinated prosecutions. But I do think it's concerning that the Justice Department has taken as long as it has. It's more than 2 years since the events of that day, and this investigation still has not concluded.
As someone who has attempted to hold the ex-president to account, what can you tell us about what Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg now faces, whether it be in terms of the scrutiny on him or even there have been concerns about his safety?
Well, I think he can expect, sadly, what we saw in Congress, what we experienced in Congress, and that will be relentless attacks by the former president, attacks that will encourage threats of violence, if not actual acts of violence. Trump suggesting that if he were to be indicted, as he now apparently has, that death and destruction may follow. This is the kind of thing that Trump says that some of his followers take quite literally and to dangerous effect, as we saw on January 6th. So, you know, I think that Alvin Bragg's life is about to be turned upside down. We're going to have to make every effort we as a society to protect the jurors that will ultimately sit on this case. And, you know, tragically, people in responsible positions of power right now, like the Florida governor, like the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, like Jim Jordan, the head of the Judiciary Committee that is supposed to be protecting the interests of justice, are instead trying to subvert it. They're acting as a kind of criminal defense firm for Donald Trump. And this just further endangers the rule of law in this country.
Were you surprised at how quickly your Republican colleagues denounced this indictment as politically motivated, as an outrage before seeing the charges?
No. I might have been surprised 5 years ago, but the precipitous decline of the Republican Party from a party that once prided itself on being for law and order now has degenerated into kind of a cult around the former president. They're not interested in seeing the evidence. They're interested in only how they can subvert justice, protect their party leader, show their fealty to his base. And, you know, if you look at what Ron DeSantis put out within hours of this, also play on, in the case of dragging George Soros into this somehow, play on these anti-Semitic tropes that this is some vast Jewish-funded conspiracy. Apparently, what you need to do to get ahead in the Trumpist Republican Party is attack the rule of law, attack the justice system, defend Donald Trump at all costs, and blow the whistles of bigotry. And they are managing to do that within the space of about 24 hours.
You mentioned death and destruction before Trump was indicted. His sort of, in his way, both warning of it and in some ways inviting it as well. And I know that there are echoes of January 6th in that as well. What do you think is important for the country to remember as we watch this unfold?
I think it's important to remember that, yes, the indictment and subsequent arrest of a former president, of a candidate for president, is a deeply troubling chapter in our history. It will undoubtedly provoke division. But what would be more dangerous would be the idea that presidents are above the law now, that you can get away with anything as long as you can hold high office. That would be far more destructive of the country, both the present and the future. So this is a sad chapter, but it's also a necessary one. There has to be accountability. And in the particulars of Donald Trump, what we have seen is every time he escapes accountability, he goes on to do worse. When he escaped accountability for his Russian misconduct, it led to worse with Ukraine. When he escaped accountability for that, it led to literally a violent, massive attack on the seat of our government. And should he be given access to power again, he will pick up where he left off. And this is who he is. This is the price of a system in which, so far, this powerful person has escaped accountability, and we need to be very aware of that and the need to hold him accountable like everyone else.
Congressman Adam Schiff, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Los Angeles Congressmember Adam Schiff, former chair of the House Intelligence Committee, member of the Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. You, our listeners, what are your reactions to the indictment? How are you feeling about it? What questions do you have about it? You can call 866-733-6786, email forum at kqed.org. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum. I'd like to bring into the conversation now Josh Meyer, domestic security correspondent for USA Today. Josh, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
So we don't know the specific charges against Trump yet, but we do know what the New York grand jury was investigating, what the Manhattan office was investigating. Can you just tell us, remind us what they were looking at?
Well, yeah, again, we think that they're looking at a variety of charges. They've been investigating for quite some time now. The main charges focus on adult film actress Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, and hush money payments that were paid to her. It was $130,000 right before the 2016 election. And so, you know, one of the big things that they're trying to figure out over there at the DA's office is that clearly they believe that there was a misdemeanor charge falsifying business records in order to facilitate that payment to her. But the big issue is whether that turns into a felony if that commission of that misdemeanor crime was done in connection with something else like election fraud. So I think that's what they're trying to do is see if the payments were made in order to influence the election and help Trump win the election in 2016. We also are reporting at this moment, I think we're just finishing up the story, that they are also looking at the payments, the hush money payments to Karen McDougal, who is the former Playboy Playmate of the Year, and whether she was given hush money payments too that were in violation of the law.
Yes. And we can get into some of the legal questions a little more after the break. As we have reported here that the arraignment is expected Tuesday, are you hearing anything about whether we will see the charges before Tuesday?
Nope. We're all waiting with bated breath and we're right. on call all weekend. But, you know, we don't know. I mean, we don't even know when the charges were filed. We have reason to believe that they were filed, that the grand jury voted, handed up the indictment to a judge yesterday afternoon at the end of their session. But, you know, these things are sealed. There's a slight possibility that it was filed even before that. Right. We don't know when the charges are going to be unveiled. I think it's pretty safe to say that they have to be unveiled on Tuesday when he's arraigned. But, you know, until then, we just really don't know. And there's a lot of speculation out there. We believe it's 35 or so counts in the indictment, but that could be for individual payments. So there's a lot of speculation out there, and we're trying to figure out really what's true and what isn't.
Well, listener Sharon tweets, "I'm very pleased he's finally been indicted," in Sharon's view, "but I'm also very concerned about the violent reaction he asks from his cult followers." Josh, you covered domestic security. What are you hearing around all that? Do you have a sense of how the base is reacting, especially the more extreme members of it?
Yeah, I mean, we have a huge staff here at USA Today that's following this, and we also have 265 other Gannett papers around the country, and we're all working together on this. And we're not hearing a lot yet about this. I mean, we're looking at social media. We're looking at Truth Social, of course, which is Trump's platform. We're just getting out into, you know, the streets and communities and seeing what's happening, calling local police departments. We're not seeing much yet. And one thing that's worth noting, I think, you know, is that, you know, Trump, when he first thought he was going to be indicted, said that basically this could potentially cause death and destruction because it's so unfair. He was much more muted, at least in terms of calling for protests and so forth in his Truth Social posts yesterday and today. But he's still rolling those out. So we're watching those to see what he's saying about it. But so far, no signs of violence. We're watching to see if people will start moving into New York City and other places. The New York Police Department, the Secret Service, and other authorities are making preparations for this. I believe they've been doing that for more than a week. So I think they're ready to go and ready for anything that happens.
We're talking about the indictment of former President Donald Trump with Josh Meyer, domestic security correspondent of USA Today. We'll get into the legal and political implications of this after the break. Stay with us, listeners. You are listening to Forum, and we want to hear from you. I'm Mina Kim.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees. who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. For the first time in U.S. history, a former president has been charged with a crime. And we're getting your thoughts and reactions and getting the thoughts and reactions of Josh Meyer, domestic security correspondent at USA Today. Also with us now is Lori Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School, where she teaches courses on criminal procedure and white-collar crime. Lori, so glad to have you on.
It's a pleasure being with you.
Mike Madrid is also with us, Republican strategist and political consultant and partner at Grassroots Lab, also co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Mike, really appreciate you being here as well.
Great to be here with you.
You, our listeners, if you want to share your reactions, questions about the indictment, what impact you think it will have on the country, even what justice or accountability with regards to Trump, what that would look like for you, you can tell us by emailing forum@kqed.org, calling 866-733-6786, finding us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum. And Robert writes, front and center in this discussion should be the ex-president's open threat of death and destruction, and figures like Tucker Carlson advising probably not the best time to give up your AR-15. These are not idle threats, but rather direct appeals to the same people who attacked our system of government and police officers on January 6th. Mike, I did not hear Tucker Carlson say this, but if that is what's being aired on a major news channel, a news station, that combined with what we have been hearing about DeSantis and other Republicans, establishment Republicans, or considered more establishment Republicans rallying to the president's side, what do you make of all of this, Mike? I'm just so curious to get your reaction to these reactions.
Well, we have to be mindful that this is not necessarily new. These subtle calls for violence have been escalating since Trump took office, and understanding that the base of the Republican Party has become anti-institutional, basically countercultural, is really central to understanding how these calls for violence not only have come to be, but are likely to increase in the coming years. So we need to be mindful. This is very serious. It is happening, and be vigilant. But at the same time, we need to be very aggressive in tamping this down and making sure that these not so subtle calls for violent action, calls for oftentimes revolutionary or seditious behavior, are treated the way that they should be. If we continue to sit back and try to understand where it's coming from, the threat becomes more real, it becomes more pernicious, and it becomes more problematic.
Let me go to caller Kyle in San Jose. Hi, Kyle. You're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. And, you know, I just wanted to, as I don't want to be politically biased here. I'm a Democrat, but I just think, if it really is campaign finance laws that are the primary charge for this indictment, I just think, is this really an equitable, is this law being applied equitable, because I think if we were to look at most Democrats and Republicans over the last decade or so, how many, if they were to be audited, how many of them would actually be in a similar plight, right? And also just, I'm not sure what it even is the penalty if he is convicted. Is it really worth driving this country further apart from each other, right? This is just stirring up hate on both sides. And I just think, is it really worth it? I mean, if it's really just about making sure Donald Trump isn't the president again, is this the best way to go about it? I mean, that's really how.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let me put your thoughts to Lori Levinson, actually, because this is a question that has come up. Again, we're seeing reporting that there are more than 30 potential charges in this indictment, but there are a lot of questions about how paying money potentially to someone to keep quiet about an affair, which I should say that Trump denies, goes from being a misdemeanor to a felony, like the seriousness of this, Kyle is worried about whether or not this really rises, I guess, to the level of something that you'd indict a former president for, Lori.
Well, I think Kyle raises really important questions, but we can't forget that the real focus here is on falsifying business records, and that these charges come on the heels of other charges against other people in the Trump Organization who have been convicted of similar offenses, tax fraud and the like. I think when we see the charges, what we'll be looking for is whether it's just paying off a porn star, and I understand why many people would say, really, you're going to bring a felony charge on that? Or whether it involves a course of conduct, false conduct, intent to defraud, whether it's concealing other criminal offenses, whether it involves tax offenses. The New York office has been looking at Trump and his organization for many years. And the real concern is that, is he, as Representative Schiff said, above the law, that he's never accountable for any falsehoods that he puts into play. You know, I also heard Kyle ask, well, what are the consequences of this?
Yeah.
First of all, even a conviction here will not disqualify Trump from running for president again. So that wouldn't be the motivation. And I don't think he would go to prison, although a possible sentence on the felony is up to 4 years in prison. I really think that they're doing it for the principle that, in fact, there has been, we think, testimony before the grand jury that Trump, with impunity, was making up his own rules and lying, and that there are consequences for that.
Let me go to caller Alex in Mountain View. Hi, Alex. You're on.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that I share the opinion of the editors of The Economist. Yesterday, after the indictment, the editors published a multi-paragraph assessment of the indictment, and they said that the case is weak and that Alvin Bragg should not have pursued the case. And they said that, so I'm summarizing, they said it would not lead to anything particularly useful for the nation.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I don't know that I've heard weak, Lori, but I've definitely heard novel. Why is it being called novel?
Well, first of all, once again, it's remarkable that people are attacking the case without actually seeing the indictment. But I do think that what we think might be some novel issues here are that it would ordinarily be a misdemeanor to falsify business records, but if it's done in furtherance of a different crime, then it becomes a felony. And what's being mentioned are federal campaign laws. So what is novel here is using the New York law to go after, in part, a federal crime. And I think that would be subject to some legal motions before the court.
Well, the Zisner writes, if DeSantis defies the Constitution and refuses to extradite, hopefully unnecessary, how would the law be enforced? Lori?
Well, first of all, I think the great likelihood is that Trump, with the Secret Service by his side and his lawyers, will self-surrender, because it's not a good look for Trump to try to hide out in Mar-a-Lago for the rest of the campaign when he's seeking to be president. He has said that he's going to vigorously defend against these charges, and to do so, he has to show up. If he chose not to, then he would be pushing them to seek an arrest warrant. And DeSantis says he won't enforce it, but I don't think that that's the end of the story. It may make Trump a hostage in Florida, which he wouldn't want to be. And DeSantis, even though he's the governor, this would initially, of course, go through the court system and the applicable laws there.
Mike, I do just want to ask you what you thought of DeSantis kind of getting out in front of that, because it did not come, it's not a bridge he has to cross at this moment, by putting out there very quickly that he would not assist in an extradition request. Why? What benefit is that to Ron DeSantis?
I'm not sure that there is one. My sense of the Ron DeSantis campaign is that it's flailing before it's even started. It's so difficult to capture some sort of a narrative as an alternative to Trump when the party is so consumed and frankly so supportive of the former president. It's extraordinarily difficult to carve out any sort of viable lane. And that's what we're watching. That's what we're seeing. He's got this Goldilocks strategy. It's either too hot or too cold, and he can't seem to find the right temperature for a message here. And I think that Ron DeSantis, his levels of support show that he's probably become more of a vessel of this, you know, hope for Republicans to choose an alternative to Trump than actually having a strong, viable base of support. And so when the focus of media attention and the country's attention rightfully is on the former president, there's really not much that can be said. And the sucking out of the oxygen of the room is very detrimental to an insurgent campaign like DeSantis's. As bad as this week is going to be for Donald Trump legally, it's going to be a worse week for Ron DeSantis politically.
Well, Josh Meyer, I do just want to ask you quickly with the point that Lori Levinson was making earlier, that Trump, in terms of being aware of what would be a bad look and a good look, would self-surrender so that he doesn't have the worst week, as Mike Madrid was saying. Can you just quickly tell us how things will be orchestrated once he self-surrenders, as he is expected to, given the fact that he was this nation's president?
Right. So, yeah, we are trying to look at all of this through that prism, which is that, as with Trump so many times in the past, you really can't look at previous policies and laws, institutions or norms to figure out what's going to happen. I mean, you know, I've been on the phone all morning with former DA officials and law enforcement officials about the arraignment process, what's going to happen. The courthouse in New York has various sally ports where they could bring him in, almost do it underground and just usher him in, get the arraignment done and usher him out. And all you'd see is a black limousine, you know, one of the beasts, you know, the former, you know, the presidential limos or whatever he's using these days. But, you know, I'm betting that Trump is going to create some sort of a spectacle about this. I talked to Karen Agnifilo, who is the who is the number two in the DA's office until recently. And she thinks that he's going to do what she calls a self perp walk, which is parading in front of the media and the cameras and all of that, and entering the courthouse that way and creating a spectacle. I'm not sure what that's going to, what that's going to do in this case, but I do know that the police are going to be on standby for this. But because he is the former president, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen. They could do an arraignment by Zoom. They could bring him into a local courthouse in Florida under some kind of arrangement between states. I mean, we don't know what they're going to try to do here. And we don't know if Trump is going to ignore what his lawyers are saying and not self-surrender. I think one thing that's worth noting is that, it's not a question of whether he wants to hide out in Mar-a-Lago if Governor DeSantis does not want to cooperate with the extradition request. I mean, if he's going to be campaigning around the country, you might have this spectacle of a former president and a presidential candidate who is a fugitive from justice in one state, which means the other states, could conceivably have a duty to arrest him on that warrant. So, we're just sort of strapping in and waiting to see what happens next. One thing that I would add quickly, though, in terms of the misdemeanor and turning it into a felony, is I think what's important here and what the DA is looking at and the grand jury, which, again, is civilians and citizens who are hearing the evidence, is that all of this was done right before the election. So it's not just a matter of falsifying business records and paying somebody off. It's doing it because he knows that if he did it, if the news came out before the election, it could conceivably kill his chances of winning. Because remember, he was a very serious underdog even up to the day of the election. So, you know, he had reason to believe that by keeping this under the rug, allegedly, that he had a chance of winning the election. So it could have influenced, who knows, if that news had broken before the election, Hillary Clinton might have been president for 4 years. We just don't know.
Again, we have Josh Meyer with us, domestic security correspondent for USA Today, Lori Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, Mike Madrid, Republican strategist and political consultant and partner at Grassroots Lab. And you, our listeners, talking about the indictment of former President Donald Trump. Lori Levinson, if things do go typically, though, there would be fingerprinting, a lot of paperwork, and maybe even a mugshot?
Absolutely. The process would be basically the booking process, where someone comes in, they have a mugshot taken. I'm sure that will be sort of leaked in a very short order. Fingerprinting, and then questions for the booking process. I wouldn't expect that the former president would be detained, unless, of course, he does one of these unpredictable things that Josh Meyer was describing, and then he might find himself waiting in a cell as this case goes on, which is, I think, another reason why he will surrender, even if he makes a spectacle of it. Once he's processed, he appears before a judge for what we call an arraignment. He's given a copy of the charges. They make sure he has a lawyer. They deal with any issues of whether there have to be conditions on his release to make sure that maybe he's not traveling or whatever that question is. And then they set the timetable for the proceedings and advise him of his rights. That's done every day in courthouses across the country. There's nothing particularly remarkable about it, but it's an important part of the process. It starts the trial process.
Yeah, and the trial could last, or to get there could last.
Yeah, I've been asked this question about how long before we would actually see a trial. It's impossible to know because I am sure that Trump's lawyers are very busy coming up with every possible motion they can. Motion to dismiss, motion to change the venue, motions just to put out things that they want the public to read. And we don't know how long that will be in the pretrial process with discovery and the like. You know, we're certainly talking months, not weeks, and we could even go beyond that.
There was a point being made, I think it was by Neil Katyal, the attorney, that since this is a state case, if he should be convicted, he wouldn't be pardoned, right? He can still run, as you say, from jail, but he couldn't be pardoned by a future president.
That's right. In fact, he can't be pardoned because the president has the power to pardon on federal offenses. It's the governor of New York who has the power to pardon on a state offense. So so it doesn't matter. And I think that they're trying to point the finger a lot at Joe Biden. But Biden doesn't have a role in this case. And there hasn't been, as far as we know, coordination between this case and the several other investigations that Trump is facing. This may be the first one out of the block, but I don't know that it'll be the only charges that former President Trump faces.
Well, this listener writes, is it not a crime to call for death and destruction? Your thoughts on that, Lori, but also just on how Trump will likely need to behave around this just so that he doesn't further hurt his case in terms of how he communicates?
Right. Well, it's certainly irresponsible, no question, to call for death and destruction, especially after January 6th, when we saw that there are people out there that take those words to heart and they hurt people. In terms of whether it's illegal, you have a trickier issue because there's the constitutional First Amendment right. And they'd have to show that these words, although, you know, not just irresponsible, cause an imminent threat. That's part of what's being investigated by the January 6th investigation. But Trump kind of knows that he can fire up his troops and he's not really going to be facing any criminal consequences, any insurrection challenges for doing so.
Again, we're talking with Lori Levinson, professor of law, Josh Meyer, domestic security correspondent of USA Today, and Mike Madrid, Republican strategist and political consultant here in California. And we're hearing from you, our listeners. How are you processing the indictment of Donald Trump? What would justice or accountability look like to you? What impact do you think that this will have on the country? What are your questions about how this will play out legally or politically? We're hearing it all. 866-733-6786 at the email address forum@kqed.org. Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, we're at KQED Forum. And we'll be back right after this break. I'm Mina Kim.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're getting your reactions to the indictment of former President Donald Trump. And let me go to Ben in Sacramento. Thanks, Ben, for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, it's my understanding that the district attorney recommends an indictment and the grand jury approves it. And their citizens, I think there's 20 citizens of New York on the grand jury. Why doesn't the Republicans direct their invective to the grand jury rather than to personify it against the district attorney brand?
Ben, so, thanks. It's a good question. And Mike Madrid, I'd love to hear you. This has been remarkably consistent among Trump's defenders that they're really targeting D.A. Alvin Bragg.
Wow. Yeah, the answer is really simple. It's a political narrative that they're trying to set. It's much easier to attack somebody who's an elected official. And, you know, the trope that's being used is that he's a Soros, quote, Soros-backed candidate, one of the most significant progressive donors in the Democratic Party, to frame this as a political witch hunt. That's the whole attempt by the Trump campaign, is to make this and frame this as this is a political act. It's not about the law. It's about trying to silence Donald Trump's voice. And you can't do that by attacking a grand jury. You do that by attacking an elected official. And that's what they're trying to accomplish here.
Well, Patricia writes, is there any Republican who can and will stand up and say this indictment is wrong, but it must adhere to the rules of the Justice Department? He is innocent until proven guilty and let the courts prove their case. That is how the law works. The fact that none of the Republicans will stand up for the law is the most disturbing aspect of the Trump phenomenon. Mike Madrid, I don't know that none will. I have heard some Republicans saying that, for example, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, for example, saying words to that effect, I would say. But I do want to ask you about what you're hearing among California Republicans, because I'll be honest, we've been scouring, especially congressional California Republicans, for their reaction to the indictment. And am I wrong in my very, you know, light reporting that I've done of this, that they are very quiet?
Yeah, not only are they quiet, but you have to remember that the demographic in California amongst Republicans is virtually identical to the demographic for Republicans nationwide. So I think there's a lot of people who think that maybe Republicans in California are a little bit more moderate, a little bit more reasonable, a little bit more, a little bit less crazy. And the truth of the matter is there's no difference between the Republicans here in California than any other part of the country. And so this silence, this deafening silence that you're hearing is complicitness. It's tacit support for what the president is doing. Now, in the conversations I've been having with them over the years, even during the impeachment hearings, they're all well aware that the president is not only behaving in a manner that is damaging to the party, but in all likelihood, it's illegal. There's very little debate about that in private conversations. Now, publicly, the cowardice is kind of striking. It's this enabling behavior that has allowed this type of activity to continue to drag the country through this torturous process. And that's the real, I think, shameful part of this episode that we're walking through in American history at this moment in time, is this just the inability of even a handful of current elected officials, Republican elected officials, to stand up and make those claims. Now, Asa Hutchinson, I'm glad he's finally come on board, but he's no longer an office holder. And we saw what happened to the Liz Cheneys of the world, the Adam Kinzingers of the world. Is any Republican elected official who stands up to tell the truth will lose their office. They will be unelected. And that's the, you know, for me, that's an easy price to pay to preserve and protect your country and the Constitution. But for too many politicians, that's just a line a little bit too far.
But you did say earlier that you felt like this was a worse week for DeSantis than it will be for Trump or something along those lines. And there are people who are saying that this indictment is a gift to Trump because it will galvanize his existing supporters and maybe draw more to the fold. Do you think that's true? Or at least do you think that's true here in California?
I think it's absolutely true nationwide. That's exactly why. And again, I'm certainly not, you know, you've got great legal minds here on the phone that can talk about the legal implications. I'm not suggesting it's a good time for Donald Trump legally, but politically, this is going to create a rally around the flag effect for him. That's the first thing. And so the base is going to start lining up in support against him. This fits right into the narrative that he is under attack while he's been fighting to protect them. This is the deep state and Antifa and George Soros and the Communist Party or whoever the boogeyman is at this given moment in time. And this will galvanize the Republican base behind him. That's the first. The second is, as long as the media attention is entirely focused on Donald Trump, there's no oxygen in the room for an insurgent campaign like DeSantis's to gather any momentum. And those are both very dangerous, precarious places for a nascent campaign like DeSantis's to be in. And once Trump is again in the limelight, you will start to see the partisan foxhole starts to take shape again, and Republicans will start moving into his direction. I think that there is a longer way to go than in terms of building and coalescing Republican support than he's found himself over the course of the past 8 or 9 years. But remember, the numbers, his support level numbers, are really not dissimilar to where he found himself in 2016 as he was heading into the primary. His numbers are virtually identical, and they have not moved since that time frame. And the likelihood of the vast majority of Republican voters who would like to see us go into a post-Trump Republican Party, or are on the fence about him or are uncomfortable with him, the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority will fall into line as partisans and come back and support Donald Trump.
Well, there are a couple other comments we're getting. Bill writes, Donald Trump has broken endless laws over the years. I think it would have been wiser to have let the blatant Georgia election tampering charge and January 6 occur first. Alan writes, I was thrilled that Trump finally got indicted for some of his many crimes. I just wish the federal government had been first and had indicted him for treason and had done it many months ago. Josh Meyer, do you want to just give us a quick overview of the other cases that are being investigated against Trump right now?
Sure. How much time do we have?
Not a ton.
all kidding aside, I think you have to take the long view here. And, this is the first case. Sources say, and it seems very likely that he will be indicted in Georgia, along with other people, for, some very serious election charges, not only, calling down there and saying, find 11,000 votes for me so we can win the state of Georgia, but also putting forth a fake slate of electors and essentially subverting the will of the people and trying to have those electors basically approved by Congress, not just in Georgia, but in other states, to help Trump do an end around, the will of the people and stay in office in 2020 after he'd been voted out. So I think that's one case. You also have the national security, very serious national security case of the classified documents that he took from the White House and brought to Mar-a-Lago. Remember, he kept changing his response to that. At one point, he said, well, I think the president can declassify those documents in his head without even really thinking about it, which is absurd. So there's some serious charges there that he could face. You also have, of course, the special prosecutor now, Jack Smith, who has been very, very aggressive in terms of making up for the loss from the Justice Department in really aggressively investigating the January 6th insurrection, what led to it, what role Trump might have played in that, and people around Trump. So he is facing some legal jeopardy on a wide array of fronts. There's other ones as well. And I think there's going to be a point where, even if this is the case that's first, you're going to be seeing these cases move through the system, at least one or two cases simultaneously. And I think the outrage over which case went first might diminish at some point. But, I'm just a reporter. I just write about what's happening and try to put it in historical context. But, this is an amazing moment in time where you have a president who for the first time has been indicted, and for the rest of his life, he will be known, at least to some, as the first and only president to be indicted on criminal charges.
Yeah. Well, Mike writes, I don't quite understand the emphasis on Trump being the first president or ex-president in history to be indicted, perhaps because he's the first president or ex-president to have allegedly committed indictable crimes. Lori Levinson, I guess I do want to ask on a more philosophical level, is there something that's been broken open by the fact that a U.S. president has now been, for the first time, charged with a crime? And I don't necessarily mean legally, though maybe it is. Maybe it is a little easier for prosecutors to be the second, and maybe we could see more things like that. But I am just curious what you think of it.
Well, it's very interesting because I think it's both philosophical and very concrete. You know, when we talk about the grand jury, it's 23 citizens. Those are people, not politicians, but people, and certainly the prosecutors presenting the evidence and even typing up the indictment. But you at least have the citizens having a say in this. I think philosophically, our country fell into the idea that, well, it'll just be like Nixon again. We'll get him out of there and everything will be okay. Just pardon him and make him go away. The problem with approaching issues like that is that Trump is not Nixon. And this nation is so polarized right now that perhaps the only thing we can turn to is what our laws say. And that's a problem if you don't have Republicans sort of saying, let's follow the law. I think that's the more serious concern here than the individual charges. It's a question of whether we will rely on our legal system rather than our political system to sort these situations out.
Well, Gene writes, something I heard from an analyst recently is that it would be a complete political move not to pursue charges on Trump. And that's because so much evidence leads to him committing a crime. So maybe people should look at it from that angle. Lori, is there a chance that while this is the first case, that it wouldn't be the first case to go to trial because of the current election interference in Georgia investigation or the investigation into his handling of classified documents at the federal level or even instigating January 6th?
There's some possibility, but it's really premature right now to figure that out.
Sure.
We don't know what these charges are. We don't know about Georgia. I do expect that Georgia will likely have charges. That was the recommendation of the grand jury. We're all familiar with what the foreperson said in the interviews. But in terms of the trial, we usually take them in order. But we don't know what the specific objections and issues will be here. And so we'll have to wait and see. It could be an amazing situation if you had everybody bringing charges. And then I don't know where there will even be, as it was said, the oxygen to focus on Trump's run for office, because he'll be and his lawyers will be pretty busy dealing with these legal cases.
We are getting your reactions to the indictment of Donald Trump, and you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Let me go to Lucas in San Jose. Hi, Lucas. You're on.
Yes, I understand that New York has some special rules regarding statute of limitations for residents and non-residents, and things were extended because of COVID. So are there concerns about how long it'll take to resolve those issues, or is that not a problem? I'm mistaken about that.
Thanks, Lucas. Did statute of limitations play a role in this, you think, Lori Levinson?
It actually is an interesting issue. New York has some what we call tolling statutes. You know, Trump left the state, and that tolls the statute of limitations. Things were shut down during COVID. That tolls the statute of limitations. Undoubtedly, one of the major pretrial motions that will be brought by the Trump camp is to challenge whether this indictment is timely. But we do have, at least in New York, those type of tolling provisions on the book. He may bring it either under the statute or he may try to bring some type of constitutional argument about a speedy trial violation or a due process violation because of the pre-indictment delay.
Well, Paul writes, prediction, the crowd cheering for the indictment will be far bigger than the crowd than the Trump supporters in New York City. I bet the Trump turnout is laughable. Mike, there have been some, I've been reading a lot of analyses, and there have been some who have said that there is, while this will create a galvanizing effect for Trump, it might not be long enough lived, at least not long lived enough in California for the presidential primary here, which will be more important than normal because of the moved up date and the need for Trump to secure the many, many electoral votes that we have. I guess the question I have for you is how you think that will play out here. You have talked a lot about how Trump over time, the circus around him, the issues around him have turned off, say, you know, women voters, for example, Republican women voters and so on.
Yeah, that's it's a really great question. And keep in mind, this is likely the first of a long array of legal trouble that the former president is going to find himself in. I'm sure there are going to be other indictments from Georgia and you know, Washington, D.C. coming out in relatively short order. The question is going to be how long can the base sustain itself? And we have to go back and remind ourselves that Donald Trump in 2016 said quite accurately, I could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose a base, my base support. And that has proven correct. As a political professional, at this point in the election, you should not be looking for the upside of a candidate. You should be looking at the resiliency and the strength of their base. And as much as Donald Trump's numbers have weakened a little bit, he has never dropped below a mid-30s support level, which is extraordinarily strong for a former president looking to come back to run for office in either party. And we also have to remember that almost all of the Republican parties in every state have what we call winner-take-all primaries. Donald Trump in 2016 won the Republican nomination by only securing 37% of the support in the Republican primary. He was not getting over 50%. He wasn't even getting 40%. So it's entirely possible to win the Republican nomination with the base level of support that Donald Trump has always had since that time frame, especially if there's a multi-candidate field, which seems to be shaping up. So look, you know, every race is different. Every race has its own dynamics. But the fundamentals in the Republican Party show that Donald Trump's base level of support is still remarkably resilient, remarkably strong. And I think every indication is it will get stronger over the course of the coming weeks, at least for this first round of legal indictments. And there's little evidence to suggest that anything is going to shake off that support, because nothing to this point has. We've gone through insurrections, we've gone through pandemics, we've gone through economic meltdowns. None of that has shaken that base level of support. I can't imagine for the life of me why these legal problems, which will be framed as his political opponents attacking him, will make a dent in that base level of support either.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze Jim in Concord in for our last thought. Jim, thanks. You're on.
Hi. So really, really interesting times. I'm an attorney and I practiced criminal law for years. I do family law right now, but I think that I don't care if Trump is guilty or not guilty. What I see is that this is an incredible moment where the United States of America, a young democracy, is moving forward. In order to move forward, you have to show the people that everyone is equal. And this gentleman, President, ex-President Trump, is a citizen. He's being held accountable. And I'm just very proud of this nation. And can you imagine the international reaction to this, especially in these times of rising dictatorships? This is an amazing moment.
Well, Jim, I'm going to leave it there. And thank you and Lori Levinson for coming on, professor of law at Loyola Law School, Mike Madrid, Republican strategist and partner at Grassroots Lab, and Josh Meyer, domestic security correspondent for USA Today. Thank you for sharing your insights and helping us in this space of trying to process everything that is going on. My thanks as well to Susie Britton and Caroline Smith for producing today's segment, Lakshmi Sarah, Marlena Jackson-Rotondo, as well as Danny Binger, Brennan Willard, Jim Bennett, Lulu Ralda, Jericho Reinander, Ethan Tobin-Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. They all make up the team that brings you Forum. Have a good weekend, listeners. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, The smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.